Carrie Pena.
Everywhere. All the time. Everywhere, all the time. Be informed. Be inspired.
Carrie Pena reports.
Hey everyone, it's Carrie Pena. Thank you so much for being here. What does it mean to be a hero? To stand up and really do the hard work? We're going to talk about that with Michael Golden, a former broadcast journalist whose investigative and public affairs reporting on politics, education, healthcare, and criminal justice earned him numerous honors, including the Edward R. Murrow Award, which is a huge, prestigious award. Michael, thanks for being here.
Carrie, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
You also worked as a campaign manager for various candidates, and now you've written a new book called Unlock Congress. Why did you want to write this book?
You know, I wanted to write it because I've seen members of Congress and other politicians and elected office holders from a few different prisms through journalism like you have, covering them, working for them as campaign manager and strategist in House and Senate races, and even as a higher education advocate in scholarship programming in Chicago, Illinois. So I've worked with them, I've worked for them, I've covered them, and there's a lot of really good, smart, competent people in Congress. I'm not one of those people who thinks they're all buffoons and out to grift off the system. There's good and bad everywhere, but it's really hard to get to Congress, and it's just as hard, if not harder, to get things done when you're there. And I know all too well that even the smart, well-intentioned people on the left, right, or in the middle, they find it incredibly difficult once they get there to get anything done that they set out to do. And in my opinion, it's a great deal of that is because of the rules, four or five major rules, and I call them defects in the system, that can be changed. And I think until some of those things are changed, it doesn't matter how good a person we elect to office or what party, a lot of these festering problems where other countries are racing past us don't get solved. So the book is my way of putting out there the ideas that hopefully will help us reform these rules and also educate folks about the fact that Congress is obligated to do things on our behalf. And if 93% of us don't have confidence, and according to Gallup, that we deserve better, but we've got to help them reform the rules so they can deliver us better.
And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that you outlined that you think need to be changed. But first, I want to read a little bit of your book, because the way you opened up the book was really striking. And I want to read just a little bit of that. And you start by talking about 25-year-old Army Captain Jennifer Moreno. Here's your writing here. It was a split-second decision. It was also the last one U.S. Army Captain Jennifer Moreno would ever make. A trained nurse from San Diego, Moreno had volunteered for a particularly dangerous assignment in Afghanistan. On October 5th, 2013, she and dozens of special operators approached a bomb-making compound in Kandahar. Moments after being told to surrender, an Afghan woman walked out wearing a suicide vest. She detonated the explosive, killing herself and setting off a second blast nearby. Six U.S. soldiers were wounded. When two more soldiers rushed to help, they inadvertently set off a third bomb. Seconds later, another Afghan insurgent detonated a fourth device. Why was it important for you to start there with your book?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you note that. I haven't been asked specifically about that part before. And in the beginning, the way that started the book off was in that first chapter, but it was more about the fact that Congress wasn't giving the death benefits to a number of our fallen soldiers, and that a loan had to be made by a private entity because Congress couldn't get it done, and then Congress promised to pay him back, and it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Most of us can't even imagine losing someone who's sacrificed in the military, but then on top of it, for the government to not hold to its commitment and provide the death benefits that they're supposed to by law for a number of things that the families are going through. And then looking deeper into it, of those soldiers that Congress wasn't helping in that instance, Captain Moreno was one of a number of people who died in this, and you just read it, this really heroic fashion. And the book, you know, in the following paragraphs goes on to say that our members of Congress, when that was going on, what you just described, were squabbling over the budget and not able to fund the government, and that's what led them to, you know, having to have a private nonprofit, I believe, swoop in and at least float a loan to take care of the families. And it's just a stark contrast between the people that are sacrificing on behalf of our country. They're, you know, risking their lives, not just sacrificing, risking their lives, and an instance, albeit a melodramatic instance, of our government not taking care of them or not going about it in the way that they're supposed to. And John McCain, who obviously is not, you know, he's a war hero, spent more than 5 years in captivity, he said on the Senate floor that all of us should, me and Congress,
right?
Should be ashamed of ourselves. And, you know, then I go on to say that actually polling shows that most Americans are ashamed of our Congress. Now, that's not to say that the people inside Congress, again, are doing this intentionally or they're not, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone in Congress who says it's a good idea not to provide those benefits to the families of the fallen. But the system is so clogged up and it's so difficult to do common sense things now that look what happened to those families. Even the threat of not being able to get those death benefits takes a nightmare and escalates it. And that's just really not, I mean, that's not the country we're supposed to be. If our you know, warriors are taking care of us, we need to take care of them. And if the government can't find a way to do that, we need to, I think, look closely at why. And so I go into that's an interesting and dramatic story, and I try to put those here and there in the book, and you let off with that for the same reason that I let off with that, because it grabs a reader's attention. But there's all kinds of things where Americans are suffering or are not doing as well as they easily could compared to other advanced democracies, and I don't believe our system is the model for the world any longer.
Yeah, I thought it was a really dramatic way to start, in particular because, like you mentioned, the next paragraph you pivoted and said, but back home, Americans were watching their elected representatives engage in a pitiful display not worthy of our courageous warriors. Now, you just mentioned the polling. I noticed in the book you made note that Gallup began its polling of U.S. Congress in 73, and that year, 1 year before Nixon resigned, Congress registered its highest ever level of public confidence at 42%. 42 years later, the same Gallup questions revealed that the public confidence had dropped below 10%, right? Are we at 7% right now?
Yeah, so a year ago, Gallup said, you know, do you have some confidence or a great deal of confidence in the U.S. Congress? And the combined number that had any confidence at all in Congress was 7%, like you said, the lowest in 40 years. And this year, now the party control has changed to the Republicans, so now one party controls both houses of Congress. And 6 weeks ago, they asked the same question they ask every year, and it's at 8%. And so the metaphor also, when you get deeper into the book, is that Congress that we pay for, okay, we pay for $3.5 billion to run Congress, and then Congress decides how to spend another $3.5 trillion on our behalf. And if 93% of us don't have confidence in it, we're getting delivered a defective product. And unlike a car or electrical appliance that you take back to the store with your warranty and say, I want my money back, you can't do that with Congress. The Constitution does afford us what I call a civic warranty, but it's different. It requires us to do something, and we can either vote new people in, but that really hasn't worked much if you look at the last two decades and the problems that are festering in public opinion, or we can change the rules. And sometimes that requires electing new people, but first, you have to make it clear that we need to change some rules and correct some of these defects so that our leaders can actually negotiate, compromise, have honest discussions with good faith, and come to solutions, because they have a hard job as it is.
Yeah, you make the case for some pretty bold reforms. I want to touch on two of them. The first of your points that you're talking about is one that we've talked a lot about, but I don't know how much can be done about it at this point, at least, and that's the role money plays in politics.
Mm-hmm. The good news is that most Americans now believe that the money buys special, you know, influence with our legislators, and most Americans, more than 75%, want to see the rules reformed. So,
well, let me ask you this. You've been on the inside. You know how it works. That's not just some fallacy. That's actually how it goes down. You buy power and influence, and even good-intentioned, well-intentioned legislators get to Congress, and they owe people. That's the fact.
Right. Right, and actually, so that's an interesting point, and that's the thing. The thing is that all of this stuff's going on, all of this corruption, if you will, but it's not illegal. It's legal. It's permitted, and actually it's encouraged.
But you would have to get a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. And I mean, do you believe that that could happen?
I believe it could happen, but also you need something broader, not just Citizens United. You need a constitutional amendment that does more to pull the money out of the system. The Citizens United, in my view, is obviously a terrible decision, and people on the right and the left believe it's a terrible decision. But there are other court decisions that are lesser known, Speech Now versus FEC and McCutcheon versus FEC, and I won't go into the details and bore everyone, but they basically, you know, it's this stuff gets very complex, but basically these decisions have allowed millionaires and billionaires to throw huge sums of money, especially in the presidential level, but also into super PACs that impact congressional elections, and that's part of the problem. I mean, right now, I believe that 400 families in the country are responsible for 50% of the super PAC money in this presidential cycle.
Another thing that you propose, and this is very interesting to me, House terms, because I know a lot of Congress people, and it is a beast. The second you get elected, you basically have to start fundraising.
Yeah, you've seen it the way I have, right, from covering these people. And, you know, I believe the description I used verbatim is they're forced to behave like hamsters scampering atop this greased political wheel with no, you know, it's on maximum speed and there's no off switch. I mean, that's even if they didn't have to raise money, but the money makes it worse. You know, you remember when Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was passed, and whether you're for or against it, if you recall, there were members of Congress saying, this is 2,300 pages. We don't have time to read this bill and really understand it. Now, think about this, Kerry. That's just one bill. It's one law. You know, whether your issue is infrastructure or the costs of college or climate change or whatever you want to see our country improve on, that takes legislation, and that's sort of dry and boring, and the super nerds like me are interested in it. But no matter who's interested or not interested, if these people don't have the time to study and craft creative, effective solutions to these problems, well, then we're all up on that wheel. You know what I mean? We're just chasing our vestigial tail. So to me, give them 4 years, elect them on the same day as the president. So now Congress and the president are aligned. They have two choices then. It doesn't matter what party is controlling what. They can either work together for 4 years. If you had four-year congressional terms, they can choose to work together and try to do something, or they can do nothing and try to outlast each other and see how voters feel about that in 4 years. Either way, they're going to be judged on that same four-year record. But right now, they push back every 2 years. They don't have the time to really trust each other or study this stuff in the way that they should. And then, like you said, the money flood gets in the way, and they're constantly scooping up campaign cash. It's not logical anymore.
For the purposes of context in this interview, are you a Democrat, independent? Where do you lean?
I am an independent. The campaigns I managed were moderate Democrats. The last one was Melissa Bean. She was a moderate Democrat in a Republican-leaning district in Illinois. And by the way, that's the other thing I talk about. We have very few swing districts left in this country. And the last person I worked for, she was a moderate. She was a blue dog Democrat, a pro-business, pro-growth Democrat that a lot of Democrats weren't happy with. But she was more of a centrist. So I'm more progressive in my beliefs, but I'm an independent, and my whole point is nobody's got the monopoly on wisdom. So if you're a Republican or a Democrat, it's mathematically illogical to think that you're right on every issue. And if you're not right on every issue, then listen to the other side and see if you can find somewhere in the middle that's practical, because that's what most people want.
You know, Michael, in reading your book and in reading some of the op-eds that you've written, it got me to thinking a little bit about JFK's Profiles in Courage. And really the heart of that book was about senators in that case who really defied the opinions of their party to do what they thought was right. You don't see a whole lot of true political courage.
No, you don't. And I'm not, so this is, that's a great question. And the reason it's a great question is because even when I was writing the book, people would say to me, well, isn't this just because we don't have the same kind of leaders we used to? Isn't it a question of leadership and not the rules? And my answer is sort of, well, it's not one or the other. They're not mutually exclusive. You might be able to say that we don't have the same kind of leadership that we used to, but my point is that it's hard to tell because the rules force them into these political positions and force them into always taking into account political considerations, and there doesn't seem to be much room to take heroic positions and be independent. And we could go on and on because that's part of the way our House and Senate elections are rigged to a certain extent. That you have to sort of knee-jerk to your base or you're not going to get reelected. And, you know, we can run our elections differently. There are other advanced democracies that do, and not change the Constitution, just change the way that we elect folks to Congress. But that's a longer conversation about proportional representation.
Well, you called yourself a super nerd, and I like that because I'm a little bit of a super nerd too, because I think the devil's always in the details. But I thought what was interesting is you're also a bit of a man on the mission because you've got all of this knowledge from being a reporter, from being a political insider. And then I read the dedication in your book, which I thought was really beautiful, dedicated to the memory of Fred Cohen, a dear friend, an authentic hero, you said. You always took an active interest, and you were always interested in seeing me become more active. So did Fred's inspiration to you propel you to do more?
Yeah, you know, boy, that's the first time I've really been asked about Fred. And he was my cousin. He was my friend. He was an amazing man who struggled with cancer for 10 years. And even while he was doing that, he was chair of the Shriver Poverty Center on law, and he pro bono prosecuted a case in Illinois that helped so many impoverished children who weren't getting health insurance the way that they were supposed to. And we always used to, you know, we went to dinner and talk about our families and talked about politics, and he was just so involved in the stuff that I was doing, whether it was politics or scholarships for low-income community college students. And he would have, you know, he passed several years ago, he would have loved this, and that's why I dedicated it to him. I mean, he always did want me to run for office or do something else. He always thought that, you know, the coming years will provide new opportunities for me to do this stuff. And we were close, and I'm close to my other cousins that are his wife and kids, and I'm glad you asked about that, because I like talking about him, and I don't get to talk about him too often. But he was also a really smart, sensible, passionate person, you know, who was open-minded and would listen to other people's opinions. And that's my point in the book, is that unless we change the rules, I don't think that our leaders really have a chance to trust and listen to each other the way that they used to. I don't think that it's all that they're poor leaders these days versus those old Profiles in Courage. I think that the system itself, the rigged nature of the system, makes it incredibly difficult. And I'm not sure Fred would have agreed with everything I wrote in this book, but as I said at our book release party, he would have really liked the fact that, you know, people at least are going to get to read it and debate and get interested and educated.
And think.
So thanks for asking me that.
Yeah, sounds like a wonderful man. We only have a few seconds left. I want to leave it by asking, what personally inspires you?
You know, I think that it's corny, it sounds trite and a bit corny, but we're so lucky to live in this country. It's ridiculous how lucky we are if you look at the world that we live in. And it's also a bit of a cliche, but it's true that our country is really more of an idea. It's based on the Constitution. And if you read some of how they created the Constitution, it was really, really difficult. And it came out of a previous, you know, Articles of Confederation not being sufficient enough. So going all the way back then, these were really brilliant people. They weren't perfect. They made mistakes. There were some awful mistakes in the beginning, in the founding of our country. But the system itself was really brilliant. However, they also put in there the provision to change the rules as times changed or we required, the situation required us to change the rules. And to me, I was so passionate working in politics. Now I'm fed up with that system. But I still believe that it can be changed and can work and still be this example for other countries that want to run democracies. I think the Constitution really served us well for a long time, but the way our system is right now, we need some updates, not just to the Constitution. Some of it's our election law or rules within the Senate. But I'm inspired because, you know, in spite of what I'm saying, I love Congress. As an institution, I revere it. I just think that it's a shame that they don't get to work on our behalf the way that they can't optimize their work, and they sacrifice a lot to get there. They miss their kids' soccer games, and they're scooping up money, which is this pride-swallowing activity every day. And, you know, they just have to, especially in this day and age, they're on television 24 hours a day because of cameras everywhere. It's difficult to run for office, federal office especially, and it really frustrates me that they get there and they can't come together even on stuff that's commonsensical. I mean, our infrastructure in this country is falling apart. We have zero interest rates, and they can't even agree on how to invest in the future of our country. And that's just, to me, insane. So that's a long answer to your question, but I'm inspired by the hope of it becoming better as we've been able to do over our history.
People can find you on Twitter at Unlock Congress. Michael Golden, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Carrie, I'm so glad. I'm honored to be on your new show, and I loved it. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
All right. We'll touch base again soon. And thanks to all of you for joining us. Today's show was produced and engineered by Shannon Hernandez, brought to you by Inspired Media 360. Until next time, everyone, stay inspired.
Carrie Pena reports. Inspired Media 360.